Welcome to this episode of From the Internet. Thanks heaps for listening. There's been a nice little upward trend on the number of listens each week, which is nice to see. So thank you very much for that. Today, I'm chatting to Candy Hertz, who is the creator and operator of On The List. Now, she used to work full-time in radio, but's taken the pretty bold leap of going out on her own. Now, there's a lot of things in this chat that Candy says that I reckon could easily be put onto one of those Instagram motivational quote account type thing. It's really impressive what she's doing. You can find out all the info on what she does at her website, candyhertz.com. And I have to send you there because she does so much stuff. I can't go through all of it right now. Now, in this chat, we do talk about the radio biz, what she liked about it, what she misses, and what she doesn't like about it. And we have a bit of a whinge. Actually in part of it. Candy's doing a lot at the moment, but most of this podcast we're chatting about her new business, which is On The List, which she created and now operates. And the chat starts with her explaining what exactly that business is.
Okay, so On The List is the way I would kind of say it, if you want to give it the really dorky startup term of my elevator pitch.
Yeah, actually that, I was going to use a wanky marketing term like that and I thought I wouldn't, but here we are.
I know. Well, you have no choice, because that's what everyone says. Give me the elevator pitch. Yep. Oh, please. I know how to talk. I don't have to practice a pre-recorded, you know, sentence. But my pre-recorded sentence is, On The List is Melbourne's only weekend video telling you the best stuff to do each weekend. So the idea is, essentially, I create videos that tell you the best stuff to do, and I have event listing that goes along with it that's curated, so there's only a handful of events I pick each week in Melbourne. And we've just started doing some blog posts as well, so we actually do tell you stuff to do and then we go and semi-review it, although I'm a bit against reviews. But
okay, and so why are you not liking reviews? Are you just wanting people to give, they, you know, just tell people what's on and they'll make their own decision if it was good or not?
Yeah, actually, it's sort of more along the lines of, what's the point in me reviewing it for you? Like, there is a point if I go to, like, a huge music, you know, festival and I review a performance that you just really missed it and you were devastated that you missed it and you wanted to know every second of what happened. But if it's just, I'm going to an event where you learn to make pizza, or I'm going to, you know, a drinking party of sorts, really, what do you as the average person get out of me telling you my experience there?
So, telling you what you missed. I don't want to know what I missed out on.
Exactly. You missed it. However, I do believe in reviews when it's something you can do something about. So, for example, if I went to, like, let's say, an opening night of a new theatre show, then yep, I'll totally review that because you get to then go to it at some point. But if I tell you about a festival that was a one-off festival that you can never do anything with afterwards, I don't see the point.
That is a really good point, actually.
Yeah.
Now, am I right in thinking it's about a year?
It's old? A very good question. I need to, like, this sounds really silly, I need to work out what my, like, work anniversary is, because I didn't start, it wasn't like, it's not like a baby, today is the day you were so clearly born.
Yeah.
It wasn't a business to start off with. So
what was it? It was just a thing, a project, a hobby, something to do, like.
Well, I really have been wanting for a long time to get more actively into presenting. I've done it for years, but I haven't done it consistently in the same way radio was consistent.
Yep.
And so I really, really wanted to be more, to keep my skills as up to date as possible. But the problem with presenting work is it's few and far between. So
it's hard to get better at something if you're doing, what, one or two gigs every fortnight?
Absolutely. Yep. And one or two gigs a fortnight would be a dream. That's not how it
one
works.
One or two a month.
keep dreaming. Honestly, okay. It's truly not that much. Like, there's not that much work out there until you've really got into something or become a face of something or you're represented by someone. It's really just hunting down work. So instead of spending all my energy hunting it down, I just kind of created it.
Yeah.
And I am that person that doesn't just, like, do random things by halves. So I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I'll create a little logo with it and I'll just have a go and see how it goes. And so I did that I made 10 episodes last year starting at the end of July. And, again, it really wasn't – the intention wasn't for it to be a business. I was just wanting to practice presenting.
And it was practice and but also maybe – creating a showreel, because I saw this and I was like, when I first saw it, I went, if nothing else comes of this, and, like, we don't know each other that well, from just looking on the internet, I just went, oh, this looks cool. And because it's well shot, you could easily send an episode off and get a job out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, though, there aren't any jobs to do. That's the problem.
There's no jobs.
The industry that I've kind of chosen. And to be quite frank, the only reason I got into radio was because I wanted to do TV and couldn't work out a path.
Yeah.
It's the most unique industry. Think of every other industry, even, you know, even radio as an example. There's a path. You can study it. You can go regional. You can practice it. You can come back. You can have really a few years behind you and mentors and all that kind of stuff. Presenting doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
There's no industry. There's no support in Australia. There's no governing body. There's no, you know, proper accredited courses. They're all like, you know, rubbish short courses.
Yeah.
So there is no path. So, well, I mean, whilst, yes, it definitely was a way to showcase what I was doing. And quite flatteringly, like a lot of people did come to me and go, oh, what's this show that you got a job on? And it was like, no.
That's me, folks.
This is my baby. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, so if nothing else, great. It definitely got me a bit more exposure and it showed people what I can do. But I don't know, Ryan, I don't know where along the line it suddenly just became, no, actually, I'm serious about this and maybe let me see what I can do with it. I don't know where that point came. So
yeah.
I'm always a bit unsure where my starting point essentially is. I kind of think, well, I registered a company in April, so like maybe then.
Yeah, right.
But I've been playing with it since July last year.
Well, I was going to, one of my next questions, because I spoke to Nathan Chan, who is the founder of Founder Magazine. And he, I sort of said to him, when you started your business? And he goes, yep, it was March the 3rd on 2013. And I said, where did you see it being after a year and how different is it than what you imagined? And I sort of wanted to ask you a similar question, but it's sort of tough when, like, as you've just explained, you didn't really have any sort of set plans for it. Are you kind of like pleasantly surprised now how it's going compared, like considering the way it did start?
Yeah, like I can still kind of answer that question. And the quick and very honest answer is I thought things would happen a lot quicker than they have.
Yeah, right.
I have had to learn the biggest skill in the last year and a bit, and that's patience, which is never something I've had before.
Yeah, I suck at that.
So,
as well.
And actually, it's actually bigger than just patience. It's being genuinely okay with letting things take their time.
Yeah.
So I did imagine that it would be somewhere else by now, and my vision for where I want it to be is actually like huge, but I am okay where it's at because I think it. I'll give you a bit of an interesting little side story. So an old drama teacher of mine recently, like 2 weeks ago, asked me if I could come with some students to a spot in the city and talk them through what I've done with my life because it's a little bit different to all the other acting past students that he had.
Yep.
And I went to talk to these kids thinking they were going to ask me really silly questions like, who's the best person you've interviewed? And, you know,
yeah,
well, have you had an embarrassing moment? But actually,
do you know Hamish and Andy?
Seriously, first question straight off the bat, a kid eyeballed me and said, hey, I'm just wondering, do you feel like you've been successful in your life? And I was like, oh, thanks, mate.
Jesus Christ,
like,
what a cracking question.
Hit me with the question that I question myself with every day.
How can anyone at any time answer that question with, like, not being insecure or weird about it?
I know. Well, actually, I gave him my honest answer because this is truly something I grapple with all the time. I'm like, am I succeeding in what I'm doing? And the answer is actually quite a simple one. It depends on how you choose to define success.
Yep.
And to me, there are kind of three ways. Either are you rich and famous? Are you rich? Like,
yep.
Are you stinking rich? And if that's the case, well, bubba, definitely failed.
Yep.
Are you famous? Kind of failed a little bit in that front so far as well. But then the third way that I think you can measure success is, do you get to wake up every day and love the hell out of what you do? And if that's how you choose to measure success, which is a great choice as one of the key factors, then yeah, then I win. I'm totally successful because I love what I choose to do every day. The other two are kind of important. I hope they come along too. But
sorry, get me wrong. I'll still take the other two. But
yeah, they're kind of you know, having riches would be nice too. But I think that's, and if that's kind of, if you're asking me, you know, after a year per se or however long it's been, if I think it's where I want it to be, the answer is not a chance.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near where I want it to be. I would be so excited if it was a bit further down the line. But I do love what I'm doing. I do believe in it. And I think it will get there if I'm I'm okay with letting it take its time.
Yeah,
now, but being so, okay is kind of hard too.
So what in that case are maybe not, well, plans, but also like dreams or goals with on the list? Or is it like you were saying that on the list is just something you can do to improve your skills to get something else? Or are you kind of really committed to the business now? How are you feeling about it?
Your question is as good as the little student's question of, you know, a question that I ask myself every day. I question whether I should do it all the time because, quite honestly, it's the most difficult experience of my life and more difficult than when I thought it was hard moving cities for radio. I thought it was hard starting new radio teams. I thought it was hard, studying a couple of degrees at the same time. I thought it was hard when I moved to America on my own when I was 19. I thought all those things are really hard, and it wasn't until this point that I went, oh, my God, those things are all a walk in the park. Because running your own business, whether you're successful or not, and whether you're making money or not, and whether you're getting to where you want to or you're not, is the most difficult road. I can't even articulate it well. That's how hard it is.
How do you split the time between making content and the videos and then just the other side that is, you know, running a small business? Because I know...
Ironically, I spend, honestly, 5% of my time on the thing I actually started this for.
Yeah.
I only present the tiniest bit of time. I spend quite a bit of time producing, but not as much as it takes to do all the other business elements. I can't tell you how long. It takes about 2 full days with 4 of us working on it to curate the event listing each week.
Yeah,
that is so much time spent just looking for events, which actually is quite fun, but it's a big time waster.
Yeah.
But that's just the reality of the way this business operates. So, whether I am doing this just to build my career or whether I actually want this to be a business, I constantly question, and I keep coming back to this thing of going, oh my gosh, can't I have both?
Yeah.
I really want both. I've kind of fallen in love with On the List, and I'm not being stubborn, but I just don't want to let it go. So the alternate to that is keep giving it everything until there's nothing more to give.
How many
and actually, to be honest, I do run out of things to give all the time.
Yeah.
But then you somehow find a secret reserve, kind of like your dessert stomach.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
How many people help you with it?
People come and go quite a bit. So at the moment, everyone's just volunteering their time, and it's really just people who have a skill they want to gain. So this sounds, I don't even know how you'd want to say this, but it sounds quite silly to say this, but I'm really proud of On the List because I feel like I'm using it as an opportunity to not only let me follow my dreams, but a whole bunch of other people too. So when I get anyone involved, it's never just, cool, thanks for signing up. Here's all this lumped work you need to do. I actually sit with them and I'm like, what's your dream? Where do you want to get to? What would you love to try? What can I teach you along the way? And give them their own thing to work on. So at the moment, there's probably 4 or 5 people tipping in a bit of time each week, maybe like a day and a half each max.
Yep.
But it's ironic because it's still not enough. And I can't believe I used to do it all on my own. I actually don't know how I did it for the first chunk of time because I can't even do it all with all that help.
So what kind of because the thing about it is it doesn't look like something that you've just – like you're a presenter and thrown together, like it's actually got quite a nice production value, the videos and stuff like that. It looks really nice. Do you personally have, you know, did you do a few, you know, editing video subjects at uni, or where did you learn, like, do you have the technical skills to back up the presenting skills?
I don't. The only thing I don't do in my entire business, and I literally do everything from random accounting and bookkeeping to a bit of IT, the only 2 things I don't do is build my own website. Oh, my gosh, that is definitely someone else's job.
Yep.
And I don't film and edit myself. So that's where my biggest costs sit at the moment and a lot of pain, a bit of a pain point for me. In that regard, but my production skills come from just it's kind of just me.
Yeah,
it wasn't necessarily something I learned, but I did. I studied advertising and I studied marketing and I worked in advertising for a few years. So I learned to have an eye for detail, and I kind of just learned how to produce stuff as I went.
Yeah, which is often the best way in this industry, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I do believe a lot in education and learning stuff. I'm a big, big fan of that, so that you've got a really good grounding and then you can go break all the rules.
Yeah.
But I actually think the bigger way to learn is just to do. So, you know, every shoot, quite honestly, every shoot I've ever worked on, whether I worked as the copywriter or I worked as a concept developer, I worked as a producer or a presenter, I am that super-duper eager beaver who
yeah.
wants to know everything. So I sit with the cameraman and I sit with the editors and I spend hours doing stuff that has nothing to do with my role, so I can kind of pick up a little something from them.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that as well. Like I sit in the in the radio, like when we make skits, they kind of I voice stuff, but I'll stay in the audio booth with the guys and just like watch them do it and be annoying. Yeah, I always go, "Am I annoying?" And they go, "No, we just think it's boring. Are you sure you're interested?" And I'm like, "Yeah."
I know, right? We're such eager beavers. But it's the best way to learn, and especially when you've got no responsibility for it, then you really can just passively absorb what you're ready to absorb. And people are really keen to share their knowledge, and I think a lot of younger people don't understand that. The big thing I've found from working, having some interns and, you know, youngsters working with me is they don't like to ask questions. They just like to just figure it out, and if they don't figure it out, then they'll just do whatever they can. And yeah. and the questions are how you like you go from just knowing basic stuff to like really intimately learning stuff. So like all my production stuff has been just it's just been my vision, really, trying to make it come to life and refining it all the time. I'm constantly refining what I'm doing. So it really is I don't know, just a bit of experience and a bit of gut feeling and a bit of looking at a lot of other stuff and learning from that.
Now, the first time we, I'll say met, but like I guess came to know of each other would be because we both worked at Southern Cross or Stereo at the same time. And I guess the people doing regional brekkie kind of get to know each other because we don't have producers and mentors. So we all kind of chat to one another.
Yeah.
How do you, now that you've sort of haven't been in radio for a bit now, how do you like kind of look back on your radio experience? And I kind of, you kind of mentioned it before that you felt like you were kind of doing radio as a, you know, to get to TV or something like that. Do you consider yourself like a radio person who's taken a break? Would you go back? Did you have a good time doing it? How's your thoughts on radio now that you haven't been there for a while?
I miss it so much. I miss it so much.
Which bits about it do you miss?
Well, it's actually interesting because right now I'm talking to you from Queensland.
Yep.
Because the Radio Awards are here this weekend and I have found a way to muscle my way.
Yeah, how? What are you doing in Queensland? Because I'm nominated
actually,
for an award and I have to stay in Western Australia, but I have to stay here in WA.
Oh, no, don't worry. I'm happy to accept the award.
Yeah,
you, no problem.
Go up and grab it. Do me a favour.
I'm covering the awards for Commercial Radio Australia.
Is that? Well played to you. And so that's justified a nice little Gold Coast trip, nice little warm holiday in October?
You know what? It's a lucky set of circumstances. I have a friend with a spare apartment. They needed some social media coverage. I wanted to go. You know, it's kind of one of those, everything just kind of fell into place.
Yep.
Which was just lucky. But I guess for me, it was my way to keep my thin little connection to the radio world, which I still check, you know, the radio sites every day. I'm still completely connected to the industry, even though I'm right now not working in it.
Yeah, and look, I don't know who when this podcast is going to be published, but for the record, at the time, Candy, we're having this conversation, Rove has been announced as the new breakfast host today, like just now. And so I'm sure you've been flicking around radio today and you're just going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
You have no idea how much of a radio gossip I still am. And radio people are radio gossip. So the minute there's a bit of gossip, you quickly jump on the phone to every single person you know and go, did you know? Did you see? Have you seen this link? Have you read that? Like, we're the biggest bunch of gossipers. And I think it's because our industry is fickle and it changes a lot. And you kind of always want to be on the front foot because, quite honestly, sometimes you've lost your job and you didn't even know it. So it's definitely one that you keep your finger on the pulse as much as possible. I love it, Ryan. And when you ask me what I miss about it, I miss the being in the know with day-to-day stuff. So because, you know, when you're working radio and you have to create 3 hours of content every day, you are across the whole world. You know everything that's going on in every facet of every bit of life. So politically, in sport, what's happening on TV, what's the latest trend, what's happening in the world of celebrities. I feel like you just feel so knowledgeable. And whilst that's a curse as well, because in theory you actually have to be knowledgeable across way too many things, and especially regionally when you don't have producers helping you, that's just a lot in your brain.
Yeah.
I miss that side of things. I miss having good conversations that stimulate thought and give another perspective on life. I really love having the honour of having that role. And I also, as cheesy as it sounds, I just love the idea that maybe I could just be a positive force in people's lives first thing in the morning, because the mornings are not a problem for me. I am happy in the morning.
Yeah, right.
So I felt like, you know, that was a really nice, it sounds a bit silly, but just a nice thing to be able to do with people.
Yeah. Now, we kind of talked about this a little bit off air, that everything you do, you know, you got to be in the moment, enjoy what you're doing. But I guess a lot of people in regional radio kind of feel like they're doing their time to get to something bigger and better. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that now? Like I said, we've just seen Rove McManus being appointed to Today FM, mm-hmm. Michelle Laurie, Chrissy Swan, like all these radio people are just moving around. And I remember
it makes it tough.
It does. It makes it tough. But what I was curious, I just needed to tell this to someone. I remember a few years ago when the Matt and Joe show was finishing, Kyle and Jackie O were finishing, Hamish and Andy were sort of finishing up, and there was this big like, oh, who's going to be the next generation of radio talent? Who's it going to be? And it turns out a few years later, the answer is, oh, it's just the old generation, just on different
coming
stations.
Coming back again.
Yeah. So how does that sort of sit with you as someone who was doing regional radio and, you know, you were nominated for NACA, you guys put a good show together. There's no reason why, you know, we or you couldn't be doing something like this. Is it kind of a bit annoying to see that stuff, or how do you feel
about
it?
Very annoying. Yeah. Like, quite honestly, I'll tell you what's interesting. One, there were many reasons why I left when I left, but one of them was we'd just gone through that wave of change in the radio industry. And based on history, people normally stayed in their roles for, you know, years and years,
yep.
and years and 10 years even, most people, especially in Melbourne radio. And so I thought, okay, a new wave just comes through. I thought to myself, I have two choices. Either I stay with what I'm doing and I keep working on this skill and my craft and keep going, or I jump ship, I build my profile. And I didn't know how. I just had this idea I'd build my profile.
Yeah.
And I then become a great product. So when the shift happens again 4 years later or whatever I anticipated, I'll be in a good position to leap back into it. So why not upskill, get a profile, and come back to it? Really annoyingly, all that's happened in the year and a half since I've left radio is change. And I do have this horrible feeling going, what if I stayed? I wonder if I would be on that change wagon. And I do actually think, I truly do think where I got to and where my career was at, I probably would have. So it is a bit of a, did I miss my moment? But here's the truth though. You can't play the game of I'm going to go regional and do my time and therefore I deserve a role in a bigger market. You can't play that game. You need to love what you're doing at every point that you're doing it and know that you're working on your own personal skills and your own brand. And when the time is right, more opportunities will present themselves in whatever way they come forward. For me, I'd done radio for 3.5 years, plus I studied it as well for a year. And I just turned 30 and I went, do you know what? I've got this. Like, I knew at that point I'd had enough different co-hosts, I'd had enough different shows in enough different cities to go, you can plonk me anywhere tomorrow and I know I can do a great job.
Yeah.
I knew I had every skill, so I was a panel up, I knew how to edit, I could record things, I was always the major, you know, the producer of my shows.
Yep.
And I can obviously do solo shows as well. So there wasn't anything else to learn for me. And I think that's a big criteria when you're working out what to do with your life. If you're in a situation where you're not having so much fun anymore, you're not seeing progression, and you kind of have learned as much as you can, you've got to move on.
It's time.
But I do miss it. I really, really do. And I think if I had my dream life, I would be able to have it all.
Yeah.
On the list, presenting, radio work, MC work.
Well, I'll ask you about the concept of having it all and dream job in a sec. But just while we're talking about regional radio, and I think everyone says what you just said in that you got to enjoy your time and you can't be looking too far ahead.
Look ahead, just not too far.
Yeah. How many people do you reckon actually do that though? Because like when you said the sentence like, oh, I'll just go to region, like people think I just go there and I wait and then I get my job. Like I feel like whilst no one says that out loud, that's a very common theme.
Of course it's common, but what I think people forget, and I truly believe this, is you can't just go to regional and spit your show out every day and think, therefore, in 2 years' time, I'm going to be somewhere else. You have to treat that job like it's a metro job. You need to work the hours. You need to put in that level of quality and commitment to your role. And honestly, I don't think that many people do. I think a lot of people just do the job that they think they're there to do, as opposed to operating in a way that is going to get them potentially to the next place. The problem, though, is that it's not always about you. It's circumstantially. And as your original question kind of led us to, it's really frustrating when you look at the radio landscape now, another shift has happened again, and all they've done is moved the cards around.
Yeah.
They haven't dealt any new cards out. And it's like, well, all right, I'll just sit here for another 5 years. And that's why I really do believe, really believe that you need to love what you're doing. Otherwise, you know, because, I mean, what happens if you sit there for 5 years and you never get anywhere else? Like, are you going to be okay with that? And if the answer is no, then you're not doing the right thing that's making you happy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or maybe you're just not being realistic. I don't know. It's unfair because it's, you know, you could be the best. It's just that there's no space.
Yeah. Do you think regional, I think we sort of touched on this, but is there's still room for people to come through regional? And like everyone's like, oh, you know, the Big Brother people and this kind of thing. Do you think you can ever foresee someone hosting brekkie in Melbourne or Sydney that was just doing breakfast in regional radio and just shuffled their way up?
Only if they're willing to let it take the time that it takes. Because the problem is, here's the problem. This is the trend at the moment with, sorry, I'm just checking if I still have battery on my phone. This is the problem at the moment, in my opinion, with talent in Australia. I'm experiencing it on every single level. So it's my opinion, but this is what I think. It's less and less and less about talent and all about profile. And you look at like WAGs and reality TV stars and Miss Universe people who don't have the required skills to present and be on radio and actually, or TV or even MC, you know, events and stuff. They don't have the skills, but man, they have the profile.
Yep.
And because all the networks are just suffering so much at the moment, they just go, oh, well, anything to get the ratings. And if I put a nobody in a role, then nobody's going to watch them, even if they're talented. And they might watch them, but it's going to be a slow burn and we don't have the time to invest that
much. Yeah, well, I think, and that's one reason, besides the fact I personally like Dan and Maz themselves and their show, I kind of hate that they haven't done that well because it's like a proof of what you've just said. Like I would have loved to them go, you know, they're not huge TV people. They're not ex-reality. They're just bloody good at radio and look at them go. And that's like a little bit, as well, as I said, from them personally, it would have been great to see them do well just to sort of be like, see?
They have done well.
They've made a great show.
Hit it's a slump.
They just barely got given a chance, I guess.
Hit a hit. Yeah, that's not fair because it wasn't actually anything to do with them. They just were in a difficult situation. It's I don't want to be dire in what I'm saying, but like, yeah, I think if you are in a regional environment for any of these kinds of roles, I think you just have to be prepared for the long haul. Because I do think that you can get there in the end. I think that's the dream. In fact, I have a quick side story to share with you.
Yeah, sure.
One of my very best friends, is her name's Nat. We did our TV presenting course together in 2008 and she was a journo already at that stage. She'd been writing it for papers and did a bit of radio, but she really wanted to crack it into TV. So she did this course, she put a show reel together and got a gig being a journo for 2 years in Ballarat in regional Victoria.
Yep.
Then she got promoted and got another 2 year contract in Bendigo, another regional Victoria space. This is now 4 years in TV, plus all the years being a journo before that, like 5 or 6 years being a journo before that. From there, she cracked it and went, I want to be in Melbourne. So she came to Melbourne, got a producer role at one of the networks, hated it, left and moved to Sydney with Sky News.
Yeah.
She then was in Sydney for a year producing. She then got moved to Perth for a year and was on the news there. And only a few weeks ago did she get poached from Channel 10 Sydney and now she's got a job there.
Far
but
out.
That journey was like if you include all her other journal years, that's like a 12-year journey.
Yeah, far out.
she stuck it out, and man, she got there. She got the holy grail in the end.
It would be, I reckon, like, it would be so satisfying anyway to just get a quick fix and get your dream job straight away, but it'd be so much more satisfying to have done the hard road and to get that gig. So
totally.
Good on her. What's her name?
Natalie Schenken.
Well, good on her. I love to hear those stories. And whilst we're on that topic of the dream gig, so for her, you know, doing the news in Sydney, which a lot of journos, that would be their prime gig. You do a lot of emceeing. You've done some TV stuff, radio stuff, the online content. If you were to, I wouldn't say dream job, but let's say dream life and dare to dream. Doesn't have to be a goal. Let's go dream. I reckon there's a big difference. I always harp on about the difference between goals and dreams. But what would the dream, how would that all come together? And what would be the perfect life for you?
That is such a cool question. It changes all the time, actually. I think for me, I love, there are elements I love. So I love daily stuff.
Yep.
So a daily show, let's say. I love, because I like the consistency and the rapport you can build with your viewers or your listeners. I love live. I just love live. I operate so much better in a live capacity than I do in a recorded capacity.
Yep.
So you're not getting the very best of me today. No, you are. I'm pretending we're live today.
I'm not going to edit this, so treat it as live.
And I love talking to people. I think like everyone knows what their strength is in this kind of industry, and I know my strength is being able to really talk to people in a short amount of time, create a rapport, make them feel comfortable, and have a good conversation that's genuine.
Yep.
Rather than, you know, just a bit of a fluff piece, but I mean, while having fun with it too. So it can't be serious. Like, I could never be a journo per se, but I would love something like a something in a morning show. So whether it was like the weather or whether it was actually on a morning show.
Oh, go on. We're talking dream jobs. Throw
yeah,
one out there.
Yeah, those are my dreams. That's them. That's
so we talk, would that be when you say morning show, like a Sunrise Today type situation?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, my God, I would love that. And I would love to be able to couple it with some radio too.
Yeah, cool.
And then, I mean, if I get to MC a bunch of gigs too, then yay, lucky me.
Now, you did a bit of, I don't know if you were filling in or part-time, but were you like the traffic reporter or you did some stuff on one of the TV stations?
Yeah, I did a month fill in for a friend,
cool.
And then a couple of extra shifts with it too. And it wasn't really my type of work. It was very prescriptive, you know, this is the traffic, this is the location, this is where we are. I learned so much with it. Oh my gosh. And I don't even know if I've ever been that nervous or something. It was a great learning experience. Plus, I got to be in a helicopter every day.
Yeah.
but that style of work doesn't give me a chance to be me. And I think that for me is the number one. So years ago when I worked in advertising, the reason I left it totally came down to the fact I wanted to be me every day. I just wanted to be me, and that was good enough. That was applauded. It wasn't
so you didn't
like
want
to
work
to try and,
on someone else's brand, on some other company, be the representative of this. You wanted to be Candy.
No, I'm actually happy working for another brand. It's just that I need to have that brand be okay with me being exactly how I am.
Yeah, cool.
So I felt like in advertising you had to kind of just a little bit be someone different, and I constantly had to come up with ads that didn't gel with me, and I didn't feel like I was just me every day. And in radio I got to do that, and with presenting I mostly get to do that. So, you know, I could never be an actor. I kind of want to be someone else.
Someone said that to me once. Have you ever thought of being an actor? And I was like, I struggle being me all the time. How on earth could I try and be someone else?
Yeah, I don't think I could do it either. And I don't like the idea of learning scripts and being serious. And I just love to have fun with the world and bring a bit of joy.
Yeah, cool.
Quite honestly. So that would be the dream. I actually do love writing a little bit as well. So, hey, if I could throw in a column too, I'd be the happiest
person.
In
a column. Sweet.
Throw it in.
Similar story, I used to work in finance. Like, I've got an honours degree in finance. Not many people know that. I don't really talk about it that much because it's really nerdy.
It's so good. I need some help in that department.
Well, I worked in this firm for a little while and it was pretty serious, especially at the end of financial year. You know, everyone's getting pretty serious. Guys.
Oh, finance, gosh. So. I know. I've got an accountant, Dad.
Yeah. And I walked into work. I was going to say one day, but it's probably most days. And I just came in. I was like, guys, you will never guess what just happened on the train. And I'd go on to tell these stories and be like, and then the guy was like this and blah, blah, blah. And everyone would be like, oh, yeah, what happened next? Anyway, one day the boss calls me into his office and he's like, Ryan, you know, I like that you've got good energy and you're sort of real positive, but you know, it's really crunch time for a lot of the guys at the moment, and you know, we don't really need any distractions. It's a busy time for us, you know that. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And he's like, look, if you want to tell bullshit stories, go get a radio job. But oh, look, when kidding. You come here, you need to get into finance mode. And so about a week later, I walked into his office with a piece of paper and I was like, you know how you said if I want to tell bullshit stories, I should get a job in radio? I'm going. I'm out.
Oh, I love that story.
Yeah.
Yay. And so I went. Because you get that, and that's perfect. That's exactly, then you get to just be you every day.
Yeah,
how cool is that?
And I have only worn a suit once since then. I don't feel like me in a suit, which is another reason why I'm sort of not going to the Acras on the weekend, because I don't own a suit anymore and I kind of like that.
Oh, we could have found you.
No, I don't want it. I don't want it. And they wouldn't let
you
me
know what?
A t-shirt.
The first job I had in radio, in advertising, it was meant to be a graduate role, and then the person in account management went, "Yoink, we'll take her."
Yeah.
And I was actually technically called a suit. I worked in advertising. I was a suit.
Because what is that? And account managers are suits. Is that right?
Yeah, they're suits. Yeah, like the TV show. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's similar to radio in that it's sort of there's the content creative side and there's the sales side and there's like a line down the middle and you're either one or the other.
Totally. And the problem was they shoved me in the wrong spot. So that was a nightmare because you were supposed to dress like corporate for meetings and stuff. And I just went, I'm sorry, but I'm not a suit. I'm a neat casual.
I'm a neat casual, guys.
I would just wear jeans and tops. I hated doing that because it was so stifling. But I'm the same. I couldn't, I mean, I most days I just wear like the most casual stuff because it's just, you just, you know, get to be you in our environment. That's the joy of it, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Now, tough question to ask because when we were in high school, who would have known that blogging was a job or what you do now is possible?
Oh, God, I know.
But if you could give any both career and, I guess, life advice or wisdom to a fresh out of high school Candy, what would you tell them?
Oh, good question. I really would say do what makes you happy at the end. Like, it's such a short story, and I don't understand how so many people don't get this. I see people all the time hating their lives because they choose jobs that just doesn't match them. They're not happy in them. And it's just, it dictates so much of your life. So truly I would just say, like, learn as much as you can, do as much as you can, and have fun. I don't regret anything I did. I think I took that advice, honestly.
Cool. That's like good. I'm glad that someone's like, oh, you know, I've kind of done what I'd tell myself anyway.
I went back in time. Years later. 15 years later. Come on, who am I kidding?
That would be a nice point to finish. But I was just thinking about the concept of, like, and obviously everyone, I always say, look, at the end of the day, you got to make your own choices. Get advice from as many people as you can, but at the end of the day, make your own choice. Were you, like, pushed into sort of creative stuff and advertising? Because for me, just hearing you say that, I was pretty good with numbers, right? And so they went, and even though I was always like the class clown and a dickhead and whatever, and it seems really obvious to me now that I should always have done what I'm doing, but at the time I was good at numbers and they said, oh, you should do accounting and finance and economics. And I went, oh, okay, great. And then I spent years doing a degree and stuff, and it wasn't until after that I went, oh, who gave me that advice? It's just not me at all.
Yeah, I wonder who did give it. Like, do you know?
I think it's just easy to say, oh, look at your math score. Be an accountant.
Yeah.
And I played a lot of sport and they're like, you should be a PE teacher. And I'm like, but I hate... No way. So did you always, were you pushed in this direction? Did you always feel like this is just what you wanted to do? Or like you were saying, it's the most fun thing, so here we are.
Well, so it's a kind of a complicated story, but I wanted to be an actor, even though I said I can't act.
2 minutes after, we just bagged out being an actor.
I still, thank God I didn't do it. But like, I did want, it was something I felt so natural with at school.
Because you said you did, you said you were talking about a drama teacher earlier. So you obviously did the classes in high school and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I had a really great drama teacher who, as I mentioned now, I'm still connected with.
Yeah, great.
But like, I felt like it was the class that I understood the most, that I connected with the most. But a really devastating thing happened in that, in my year 12 final drama exam, this is like a big allegation, but I'm going to make it.
Should I get the dropping of bomb sound effect ready to go?
No, actually. When I tell you what it is, you're probably going to go, probably shouldn't have said that.
Okay.
No, it's actually quite a bad thing. So what happened was I did my final year exam and I was in whatever, let's say room C.
Yep.
Yep.
And what happened was I got a really bad score, a really bad score. And my drama teacher was the head examiner, so he knew exactly what score I should have gotten. But I wasn't the only one in my class. There was about 10 of us in my class. They got significantly incorrect grades.
Right.
So he went back through and had a look at it. And it turned out, I'm Jewish and I went to a Jewish school.
Yep.
And it turned out there was one person in one of the adjudicators who was very anti-Semitic.
Really?
So all the Jewish students, he just marked significantly lower. And when I say significantly lower, this is what happened. So it was out of 92.
Yep.
One examiner gave me 91. The other one gave me 90. They both put me up for top score for the year of anyone. Both of them did. And then he gave me like 50.
Far out.
So I ended up with like a B. And the only reason I know this is because my teacher, who was the head examiner, completely illegally went and had a look through it all and went, because he knew, I wasn't the only one left devastated by it. And it significantly affected
my school. Judged everyone from your school down, or were you?
Everyone from my school. Everyone from, and only my school. So, because for the rest of the day, he had students from all the other schools. And it doesn't make sense if two examiners are giving you 91 and 90 out of 92, and the other one gives you like 50.
It's so funny that you're still very aware of this so many years later.
Because it defined my life, because I was going to drama at uni, and then I decided not to because that so significantly affected me.
Well, you just went, I wasn't good enough to get the mark, so I'm not going to pursue this.
It wasn't even that it wasn't enough to get the mark. It was that I was so disappointed that I had done so badly that I just went, obviously, I'm not good. And I changed what I was going to do. So, because I didn't find out the reason why until a long time later. It was only because my teacher quit being the head examiner because he was so angry about the whole thing that he was like, whatever, I'm just going to tell you guys so that you know it's not you. But by then it was too late. So I did a couple of drama classes at uni, but I went, I think I want to go down a bit more of an academic route. And I'm really glad I did. I studied marketing and media and communications. And
do you think it's necessary now, like looking back, that you it's the good skills to have?
Yeah, I use them every day. I feel so equipped for business, for life, for my own. Like, you ask me things like, how do I know how to produce? How do I know how to do branding? It's my marketing and media background. My media degree was a load of rubbish, but my marketing degree gave me so – I still use that knowledge when I'm trying to work out how to attract my customers, when I'm trying to work out my pricing, all that kind of stuff. I can't tell you what a good grounding marketing is for anyone who ever wants to do any kind of business, anything.
Yeah, right.
And I think it's so much stronger than being really niche and doing like a just PR or just, you know, one part, one element.
Yeah.
Actually, like a full, broad, really good marketing degree. And then I actually ended up teaching it for a few years at uni because I still love it so much. I think it's still my favorite, one of my favorite things to do is, you know, analyze and strategize and do all that stuff because you get to look at things from a few perspectives as well.
Yeah, cool.
So I do really see the value in studying, but I also think, unfortunately, for people coming through the system now, there's not only like a you should maybe think about doing an internship. It's like if you don't do a bunch of internships, you'll never get a job.
Well, just quickly on that, how many internships you've done? I'm trying to think of how many. I reckon I did intern/work experience/something. I reckon probably 6 or 7.
I do you know what? I had jobs all the way through everything I did.
Yeah, right.
Like a few jobs. So like I worked, I didn't even know it was considered sales, but I worked in sales for 3 days.
I
didn't know
how?
It was sales.
No.
I hate sales. Trust me, I hate it too. I didn't know it was sales. I sold body jewelry from a wholesaler to like the retailers. I used to just go and like change stock and show them new stock. And I didn't really quite realize that was there for sale.
Sales. That's that sales all the way.
I know. How revolting. I hate sales. I wish I had those skills in my business now. I definitely don't. But, yeah, I mean, I think you have no choice now. Like, I speak to my interns all the time and I'm like, have you done other stuff? What have you learned? And they're like, yeah, you learn nothing from the bad ones, but you have to do it. And it's like,
Well, I did some that I probably could have easily not done and would be no different and I've wasted my time, but you don't know when the good one's going to be.
But you don't know. It's not actually about the good ones. It's about the good person. I had someone else who I know who runs a business much, much bigger than mine, who I was talking about my interns to the other day, and I was telling them how I work with them, where we sit at a table together all day and they ask me questions. And they're like, okay, so you're not just hiring them as interns, you're actually mentoring them. And I, again, didn't see it that way because I wasn't putting any label or anything. And I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of am. And I think that's why they love it. I mean, I think they love it. They tell me they love it.
I hope they love
because
it.
Because I'm actually I'm not just plonking them down, going, here's a whole lot of work, go to work. I'm teaching them as we go. So, and I mean, I learn from that so much as well. But I think it's not so much the right place. I think it's the right person that you work with.
Yeah, right.
Isn't that jobs?
Yeah, and you can learn stuff off good people in shit jobs, but it's hard the other way around.
Totally.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, have fun at the Acras this weekend.
Good luck to you.
I'm jealous that I've been nominated and I'm staying here because I've got a gig on Sunday and that I couldn't fly back for. Oh, it's not exciting. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that in case they're listening. It's awesome. I am judging a local talent contest at a shopping centre in Western Australia. And then on Saturday, I'm hosting an OB, and on Friday night, I'm seeing Will Anderson in Perth. So I've got a pretty good busy weekend.
You're a great weekend.
But I can't.
We're going to miss you here, my love.
Can't squeeze time to get
to the
Are you
sending your co-host?
Yeah, she's going. One of us had to stay to do the work, and the other is going. So Rosie will be there.
I think she'll be the one then collecting the award on the stage.
No, you can go up there. It'll be fine. And what? And you're working for Commercial Radio Australia, so can we? Are you red carpeting? Are you tweeting? Are you Snapchatting?
I'm actually just doing. I'm quite lucky. I'm actually just live tweeting the conference.
Okay, cool.
And then attending the ball. But actually, I just got a new gig, which I haven't really announced. But that's okay because now it won't matter. With the basketball in Melbourne, with Melbourne United.
Oh, cool.
I actually am on a 7 a.m. flight on Sunday morning to get back in time for the first game.
Well, good luck with that. Congratulations on the new gig. And I hope they're like, who's the new girl that can't even talk and smells like tequila?
No. I will make my fun night the Friday night. There is no way I would do that to myself. Could you imagine?
Well, I don't have to imagine. I've done worse things many times. So that's probably why you are where you're at, being such a professional.
No, stop your nonsense. You guys are absolutely kicking goals. I love your show. So.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me, you little talented friend.